Hi. I have a few apologies. One is that I will read out since, English isn't my first language. The other one isn't so much an apology, it's more a decision. I'm not so fond of any sort of presentational software. Since I'm a software test engineer, I simply hate computers and software. So I just read it out, and my talk is a bit of an alien within this conference because there's almost no sex in it, and actually there's no science fiction in it. But I've read some crazy theories written by Slavoj Žižek and Arne Badiou, and I think that counts enough for social fiction. So what's love got to do with it? What is love but a second-hand emotion? Remember when talking about love was talking about desire, and talking about desire was talking about feminism, and talking about feminism was talking about differences? Anyone? During my most recent readings of political theories, it felt like that were the good old days. What happened? Honestly, I'm not 100% sure about that. It will not be possible to talk about all we should consider when talking about political agency, gender, sex, and politics. Additionally, there is something, and you might have come across this, that yourself. Every time Žižek readings are involved, it gets blurry, hard to grip, and even harder to explain. But maybe that's too much credit for Žižek. Maybe that's happening every time it comes to talking about language and meaning. Maybe that's it. Right, you'll say, but we're talking about love, aren't we? Well, love is often mistaken as only a feeling, chemistry, or even nature. Well, it's not exactly that. Love is a cultural concept, a convention, something that is, of course, bound to the logic of language. Language. Both Žižek and Badiou are using post-structural concepts of language, and theirs especially is derived from Lacanian psychoanalysis, which is confusion enough. It would really go too far to talk about Lacan's ideas in detail, yet of course not talking about Lacan would be even more confusing, since Lacanian ideas are the very foundation for Žižek and Badiou to develop theirs. So, when Lacan says there is no connection with the real itself, then Žižek would say there are moments when the real breaks through and the connection with this real is possible. When Lacan said that the economics of love are based on the exception, or a very specific exception, and that there is no way to really get the other as the complete other without thinking, desiring yourself in it, then Badiou is forcing to make this exception a new universalism. So far, so good. Love is the message, and the message is love. These theories are situated in a post-empire theory and post-9/11. To me, it is very interesting to see how political agency is being shifted away from the complicated yet open settings of the theories of the 1990s to somehow closed and desperate ones in recent publications. And you will see what I mean when I go further. What I mean is that if we take a closer look at the writings of Žižek and Badiou in particular, we can see how a pledge for universalism can go wrong, although there have been similar pledges in the early 90s by feminists like Donna Haraway that were more successful. Arguing for one, for united stands, for equal voices, for unified goals, is a very strong argument, so it seems. It was not a small part in the ongoing discussions in the late 1960s up to the early 1990s to find ways to involve the silent masses of the oppressed and underprivileged. It was this oppression that should unify and create the sense of solidarity and agency to overcome the repression. And materialist analysis puts its emphasis on exactly that point. Of course, a common sense of morality should tell us that it is just natural to put sympathy and solidarity to those who are not fortunate. Ironically, the summer of 68 that took place in spring right here in San Francisco was flooded with future lawyers and professors that could go back to their trust funds and easily switch back to the elitist benefits of the establishment they tried to fight against. Does this fact make their claims less valid? Yes and no. And that is another form of the problem a claim for universalism always bears, as the effect of the struggle doesn't mean the same to all involved, and that effect is made invisible within the claim for universalism. What is the problem or need that leads to pledging for universalism? And now maybe the sci-fi hits in. It is the apparent goal of the salvation from capitalism, which could be translated into the more abstract goal of a paradise that is waiting for us. This paradise is a promise that comes in many disguises. May it be the nirvana, or heaven, the messiah, or peace on earth, no pollution, or simply nature undisturbed by man. One of the many questions coming with the craving for paradise is who is in and who is out, which is all but an ethical discussion. The paradise, or utopia, might come as something worth to put yourself at risk for. It has to be desirable and it has to be within reach. This within reach means that the way to get there has to be sketched out more or less. Funny enough, the sheer concept of the paradise alone doesn't do anything. As you could always say, it is not for me, it is for someone else, and that is where universalism comes into play once more and with more force. Who will be in and who will be out? When I am king, you will be the first against the wall, is one way to solve the problem. Another one is to say that there is no need for a binary structure to this. It would be a pledge for situated objectivity that doesn't need to be reassured with one. It is not very surprising that Alabadiou is using St. Paul as the figure which is embodying his idea of a new universalism. He says in his book on Paul that he was the first one to communicate a singularity, which would be the resurrection of Jesus. For Badiou, the story of Saul that becomes Paul is the story of how to overcome an established order to establish a new one. Not only that, but also how to involve masses to this new order by offering ways to participate the truth event. It might not sound very spectacular to you, but if you take another minute and think about it, there is someone offering you something that is in itself true, that means it is free of any doubt and any responsibility. In addition, it is good and will guide you to paradise. I'll have to say that, of course, Badiou is not putting it that simple, and he wouldn't want it to have to put it that simple, since he puts a lot of effort in his logic of this supernumerary, which means that the one is always a partial one that is splitted in itself, so the universal Badiou is trying to create is folding from and between the supernumerary subjects. Indeed, this comes rather close to what Donna Haraway describes as situated knowledge in her claim towards a new objectivity. Yet, she wouldn't want to have this objectivity ultimately translated into one truth or paradise. nor one powerful agency to achieve it. And that is where love comes in. But you puts an emphasis on love and grace. This love is the love of the mother to her child, since the father is the law we should overcome. Hence, this is why Jesus has to provide the truth event. A truth event that is not only providing truth, but is also true in itself and has no contradiction. The Christian love is not the non-hate of God to the humans, it is love and love alone. That means it cannot provide anything false or evil. The ultimate agency is represented through a fatherless child unconditionally loved by its holy mother that is free of any original sin. Kierkegaard describes fear as the root of original sin. The concept of the original sin is bound to the concept of free occurring of the ever same as it is reborn with every new human. So Mary was without any fear of the future. This would be a rough capturing of what unconditional means in this context. It is obviously the case that only those who subscribe to the new universalism will be loved unconditionally. The rest might as well just be ignored if they're lucky. The notion of unconditional love is what should enable to overcome the law. This abstract law is what Badiou and Žižek identify as the evil to overcome. Throughout my readings, it felt like the law and capitalism are used interchangeably. Not only this is pointing to a slightly anti-Semitic tone, especially within Žižek's writing, as the law is not only abstract but equalized with Judaism. Another thing that is attached to the law is history. Alain Badiou not only wants to say that political agency needs new universalism, no. It should provide the possibility to transcend history, not only the personal one, but the collective history. The new order would be free of the old law, would not be attached to the old language and meaning. Doesn't that sound great? All that achieved just by love for the real event, the singularity, a break. Yet who would we be without history, without guilt, without the burden of meaning? I have to confess that the idea of such a political agency scares me more than it liberates me. It was the love for transcendence that generated the worst in mankind throughout history. Purity as a consequence is attached to this agency. The either you believe or don't believe, it is paranoid in itself and in its future. It seems like as if Žižek is struggling with this part of Badiou's theory since he's putting emphasis on the death of Jesus on the cross. This allows him to introduce doubt into his version of Christian love, whereas doubt has not much place in Badiou's theory, it becomes more and more important in Žižek's. Žižek, following Mouffe's and Laclau's concept of the political agency that is very much against any equations of institutions and actual practices, he moved from a harsh critique on Badiou to finally introducing large parts of Badiou's ideas into his own. Žižek combines Leninism and Christianity to the ultimate political agency. This one should enable a transparent self, something that is impossible for Freud and Lacan. It literally would be a self that can read the unconscious without any problem. And I mean, for any of you who have seen Forbidden Planet, know that this is very dangerous. Or more precisely, it would locate the unconscious within the self. It is a self that shares space with the real, and as we've heard before, the real is something that doesn't need any language or logic, hence becomes nature, bear any need for language or history. For a long time, Žižek doesn't dare to go this far in his writings. In his recent publications, though he suggests that this transparent self is what the dying Jesus on the cross resembles. Dying in love for our sins without any grim against Judas, he is doubting for a moment, asking, "Oh my God, why did you leave me?" That is indeed spectacular. When he puts the possibility of connecting with the real, the world as it is, without the need of translation, he creates a zygotic subject, one that is full of visions and free of reality and fulfillment of the law. Both Žižek and Badiou go with the Paulinian paradigm of love as the fulfillment of law. And in this very statement, it gets clear why they put their emphasis on love as the foundation of their new universalism. As a feminist and as someone who went through different stages of resistance against hegemonial power, it makes me very suspicious to read such suggestions of political practices. Honestly, I wouldn't even put a thought on reading that stuff if those two weren't good examples of the backlash in political theory and activism, at least in the discussions in Europe, and especially in the German-speaking parts of it. Žižek and Badiou are the heroes of middle-aged white activists. After my elaborations, you may understand why. After the years of simulacra, rhizome, and post-feminism, it must be wonderful to subscribe to something that provides a new common ground. But sad to say, it is not only a claim for a common language, like the feminists were struggling for. No, it also is a claim for a common truth, and as a consequence, a common political and ethical codex. You might say, but there is the fractal self of Badiou provides and the doubt that Žižek adds. But isn't all that nothing more than a makeup to a very conservative, even racist theory? Since those little concessions are getting almost invisible within the suggestion of one paradise for all who believe. Like the Marxist activists in the student movements, Badiou and Žižek would say that racism and sexism are no struggles themselves, as they'll be solved once the law is ineffective, and that makes love not enough. It might not be as catchy and comfortable to think political agency along even more fractured, less assuring path. When in 1985 the Manifesto for Cyborgs was published, Donna Haraway was going a very unusual path. She was suggesting that we don't have to decide whether or not we're women by nature since we're all cyborgs. She was clearly speaking out against the promise of a feminist paradise that will await us at the end of our struggles. She was one of the first telling us that we are not united but a perpetuated nature of being women. Others like Rosie Pridotti and Teresa De Lauretis were offering insights into building new narratives and ethical questions of what constitutes a subject. Therefore, I was more than surprised to see the paradise dawning again in those middle-aged men's theory. While I can understand the desperation that comes with reading post-structural theory, I find comfort in thinking that there is not one truth and not a right or a wrong thing to do. Isn't it comfort enough to know that trying alone is worth trying and that failure is not taking away any validity of the effort? Like Susanne Lumerding highlights, those terms like truth and validity, I can't really say it, are not pre-existent. They are created within the process of negotiation, resistance, and the fight for ideas. But not everything can be valid, you'll say. And yes, that is true. This kind of subjectivity is not the opposite of objectivity. It took me 10 years of reading to get to the point to actually understand that kind of logic. You may be faster, of course. I was not. An argument that needs the postulate of universalism to its claims as a precondition for the, and now the bad word comes again, validity, is it right? Okay. Is of course not able to reflect a structure that creates this validity to in the translations of its context in between the points and knots of the structure. That is why it is always a question of the method that has an effect on the ethics of an argument theorem. But exactly that is why guys and like Badiou and Žižek would deny in their claims for universalism. Since universalism is only unfolding for those who believe, as there is no idea for what the truth event or the paradise is meaning to those who don't believe. This neglecting of minorities is what makes their ideas invalid for me. A call for political agency that is meaningful for everybody and simultaneously leading to a salvation is not really something I'd like to subscribe to. Maybe that is why reading Giorgio Agamben's The Time That Remains was more meaningful to me. His precise reading of Badiou and the Polonian letters, especially the ones to the Romans, is pointing to the problem of taking history away from the subjects and also points to the problems of recognizing when said paradise is starting. Probably this sounds like a question that would be easy to answer. It is like most people say they'd change everything if they could. Usually I'd remark that if they could do that, they'd actually change nothing, since change is a parameter that evolves in shifting something and not erasing it from the surface. It is a shame that it is impossible to hand over all the interactions these theories have with other hegemonic and or progressive political theory. I hope that some of you sense the need to ask about preconditions and offers within the ideas you use to cope with society as it is. As you can see with all the points I've raised, that this discussion is very extensive. I don't want to hurt anybody's religious feelings, but I really don't want to see religion in a place where it is describing so-called progressive politics. I don't want to have the option to either believe or not believe, and I don't feel like love or any other feeling should be the practice for a new universalism, since I don't see how such new universalism would do any good. I beg your pardon, but I never promised you a rose garden.
Okay, whoop. Okay, and of course we have still time for a couple of questions. So any Q&As?
Can you talk a little bit about what, I mean, it sounds like you think it's pretty problematic how popular Žižek is a little bit, and like how he kind of got to take over as the poster boy for theory. Like he has movies that people who don't really read anything else wind up seeing, and I mean, how do you think his popularity sort of plays into the whole debate? I don't know, that's not very clear, but...
His popularity, you know, isn't that much of a problem. The problem is that he, coming from a background like Lacanian theory that has a very elaborate idea of what are we able to grab within language? And we are driven by language. And there is something that Lacan calls the real, that is the excess of everything. It is more than we can capture with language, right? But, and that's our failure, so to say, or as religious people would say, that's our limitation, that's when we got kicked out of paradise. We only have language to talk with the world, right? And the shift he made within the last 10 years is to offer an escape out of this trap. When he says that, figured in this dying Christ on the cross, we can communicate with the real as it is and make it available for everybody, right? And, you know, for me, as I try to say, it's very, very, very dangerous to say everybody will get the same, because it's neglecting the actual context people are in, and it would suggest that there is a position, a higher position, from where you can see everything as it is, which is God. Is this somehow an answer? I mean, for me, it's not a problem that Zizek is popular, right? Or that a lot of people like the way he's talking about popular culture and psychoanalysis. It's really this political theory he's writing within the last 10 years.
And of course, as we are speaking about God or non-God, the light shines in. It's whoosh and toch, and there he is. Still have time for one or two more questions.
Yeah,
of course.
Not that I know about you very well, but what I always found interesting about his idea on this truth event is that he never speaks of the event as such, as a real thing, but as the political process that follows an event, which is a retrospective process of keeping up the truth with some historical moment. That really makes his political theory, I think, interesting, more interesting than Zizek, which with his pathos of authenticity. Because but you, it's totally clear that this is a cultural procedure to keep up the truth. The truth. I don't know the English word for Treue Prozedur, but I always like this notion of a political process as affirming an historical moment as being an important tool for political thought.
Yeah, but isn't it a bit irritating that he's choosing Christian love to illustrate progressive political agency? And I mean, I read the whole book on Paul. He wrote and he's really doing like a dance around it, right? And I always ended up with this question in my head, but why choosing this context and why not choosing any other more open ethical setting to develop questions? I mean, that's why I took Donna Haraway in with her cyborgs, and as she kind of followed a similar project, right? To say, how do we deal with terms that seem to be pre-existent, like objectivity, but are always reassured with current practices of objectivity, right?
I don't know exactly, but I think maybe what makes Donna Haraway more interesting is that she's a more heretic Catholic, but she still is one. So they might be nearer than it seems. I don't know how heretic Badiou is with his Catholicism.
Yeah, but I mean, he stays in it, right? He never steps out of it, at least in this book on Paul. And I'd forgiven Badiou the book on Paul, but I don't forgive Zizek. Almost like 11 publications on this theme. So I've all read them, and it's really hard.
Good. Okay, if there are no further questions, I would say we go on. And yeah.